for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 305 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This weekend in the States is Thanksgiving weekend, and one of the things I'm thankful for is a chance I had to recently talk with Bob Sally, the creator of Salvagers and Shelter Division, as well as several other projects that we get into discussing. It's great to get updated about the Sally verses, and I think you're going to enjoy what he has to say when he talks about connecting with people, the importance of conventions, as well as other things, including music that he likes to get into on his Facebook page. So he's got a lot of interesting things to say to help make this holiday weekend a special one. There's a lot to get to, so let's get on with the show. It's great to welcome back to the podcast Bob Sally from Salvagers and Shelter Division and goodness, all these other good books that you do, Bob. How you doing today, Bob?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on, Wayne. It's always a pleasure to be on your podcast.
Why don't we for once list all the things you work on? Because I never can remember them all off the top of my head. I know Salvagers, you're just wrapping up the second storyline in Salvagers, as I understand.
Yeah. We're already 8 pages into volume 3. Wow. I have a new artist, Eric Gadal from France. He's amazing. I'm really excited to work with him. He's one of these guys. I'm very new to his style where I give him my script and I don't see anything until it's a final page and I'm like, oh, wow. Okay. Yeah, that works. So it's to a point where I trust him enough where I'm like, you know, you're gonna take my script and you're gonna do better with it than, you know, if we went back and forth on it. So he's just doing an amazing job. Getting into the indie comic world, our uphill battle is always the time that it takes to put something out. When I was working on Volume 2, Chris Jevona, I loved working with him, but he told me right off the bat that he only wanted to do one volume because he wanted to work on, he had some stories that he wanted to work on himself. So it kind of was a blessing because I could work on volume 3 while he was doing the art for volume 2 and Eric was able to start working on it, while we were actually still working on volume 2. And that's one of the reasons why, like, you know, I'm a fan of, finding like anchors to do, you know, people like are always looking for an artist that does both pencils and inks. But one thing I found is like, if you can find an anchor, that saves a lot of time. You can get somebody doing the pencils and they want, instead of them doing the inks, they're moving on to the next page and you have an anchor doing that. And that's what, I think that's what, one of the things for us indie comic people, like we need a, there's no way that we can keep up with Marvel and DC, but we have to, you can't be putting a comic out every 8 months. So anything you can do to kind of, you know, shave off some time. So that was, it was great that, Chris was upfront with me telling me midway through that, you know, he wanted to do his own thing. So I was able to find an artist and start the production of it.
So how'd you find this artist before we go into that? How'd you locate this guy?
You know, it's funny is, so Salvagers was Salvagers, and I met this guy who works in France for Editions Reflections, and his name is Johan, and he wanted to translate Salvagers into French. So I looked at everything he was doing, and while we were looking to do a short story, I didn't really have a big pool of artists at the time. I didn't really know as many people as I know now. Mm-hmm. And I went to Johan and I said, I was like, you know, do you have any artists? I'm looking to do this short story. And he showed me that what Eric was doing. And Eric was actually working on horror, The Crow. The Editions Reflections got the license IP to do The Crow in France. Mm-hmm. So he was doing the work for The Crow, and I loved his work. So I had him do like a little 4-page, you know, short story for me. Mm-hmm. And then I brought him in to do a Deliverance issue that is out there. So I felt like he knew the characters well enough, and we kind of knew each other already. So I didn't have to actually go out there and build a new relationship. I was able to kind of bring him in. He was kind of plug and play. Mm-hmm. And he's an amazing artist. So I can't wait for him to finish this and get it out there. Because I know as we get into how Volume 2 ended, and as people are going to start getting, you know, that issue, mm-hmm. it kind of has that Empire Strikes Back ending. Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of looking forward to, people aren't going to have to wait 3 years to mm-hmm. find out, you know, what's all this mystery. So we'll get it out there. But that's Salvagers.
Mm-hmm. Now, you were going to say something before I interrupted you. What were you going
to
say?
Oh, no. And then I was just going to go on to say that I'm also doing Shelter Division, which we're working on. We're halfway done issue 2 of Shelter Division. Mm-hmm. And I'm also doing a story with Nathan Kelly called Drexler. He has this idea, and he brought me in to do the writing for it, which I'm excited. You know, it's exciting to like work on somebody else's baby. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he and I go back and forth, and I can see the enthusiasm in him, like where he's constantly like talking like, well, what if we do this and what if we do that? And, mm-hmm. And it's fun because you work off as a artist, writer, artist team, you work off of each other's energy. And Nathan Kelly's got a lot of energy. And if you haven't read Drexler number one yet, mm-hmm. contact myself or Nathan Kelly on Facebook, and we'll shoot you a free copy. I know Nathan's probably like, what? No, send him to Comixology. But mm-hmm. I'll send you a free copy, because mm-hmm. I'm all about sending free digital copies, because I think that people, when they read that, they'll, if they like it, mm-hmm. they'll say like, okay, well, where can I buy the hard copy?
Well, I always tell the story of a guy in the UK who had gotten, somebody had picked up his digital version and had set it out and sent it out to everybody, basically. And at first, he was horrified. But then all of a sudden, people started coming up to him in conventions and saying, how can I get a paper copy? I really love the digital copy so much. Now I want to get the paper copies moving forward. He said, if I could find that guy, I'd thank him for doing
it. Yeah. Seriously, it's one of the things when I first, when I talk to people that are just breaking into comics, and it's probably something I think I probably did when I first came in. Mm-hmm. You know, when I gave a digital copy of, you know, Salvagers issue 1 or 2 to somebody, you know, I think I was kind of more in tune to giving it away. Mm-hmm. And I mean, people like, I talk to people that have that issue 1 or 2, and they'll say like, you know, for your eyes only, like don't share this. Mm-hmm. And I tell them like, you know, you should be asking me to share this with everybody. Mm-hmm. You know, the more people, when people read something on like digitally for free, mm-hmm. if they like it, then they're going to want a copy of it. Mm-hmm. And it can't hurt. Like, you know, digital sales are so small. Mm-hmm. Giving your comic away digitally is not going to hurt your bank. It's not like, you know, you're going to make all this money in Comixology or drive-through. If you just give your comic away digitally, people that want it are going to then be fans of it. They're going to share it. Mm-hmm. And those people are going to be like, okay, now where can I buy it? Because I want to hold it. Like, I want the copy of it. We're at Source Point Press. We do a comic book that Dirk Manning wrote, and it's for the band Twisted, T-W-I-Z-T-I-D. And we were at New York. They came to New York. They did a signing at New York. And we've had all of our booths. And when you see a Twisted fan come up to the booth, they never buy one copy. They always buy multiple copies. And we also have, you know, those copies where artists draw on them. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've seen countless people buy, you know, for $80, buying like one of those sketch cover books with an original sketch on it. So, I mean, if you're selling comics, you're selling to fans that want that signed copy, that, you know, that copy where they're going to be like, give me two because I'm going to keep one in the sleeve and I'm going to read the other one. Or even like, you know, like I want to read this. And I've had people, you know, I'm always shocked when I have like these brothers or these friends come up and they both buy a copy of the graphic novel, where you think in your mind, you're like, well, your friend just bought it. So, you know, you could read his copy. But the fact that they both buy it shows you, like, you know, what comic fans are all about. They all want that copy for themselves. So giving away a digital copy is better for you. It's, you know, it's what you should be doing. So, yeah, I mean, if you have a comic and you have an issue one, even if you have just like an issue one and two, I encourage you to give it away. You know, post it up, give it to people, encourage them to share it with their friends, because how else is anybody going to see it? You know, when you're just starting out, you know, that's the only way, word of mouth and sharing that. It's almost like a kind of like an underground movement. So, so definitely that's kind of how Salvagers started. It was just giving it away.
Okay. But now you brought us back to Salvagers. I do want to really quickly, I asked a question, how many things you're working on? Of course, each one has their own good stuff to talk about. We talked about Salvagers, Shelter Division. You've got Jasper's Midnight Tavern, is it?
Yeah. Oh,
I got Jasper's Starlight.
Starlight Tavern.
Okay. And then the other stuff you're working on, what are the other things?
Well, I mean, right now I'm working on a story. The working title is called Ogre, and I'm working on that with Sean Daly. He just finished up a comic called Samurai Grandpa, and that'll be coming out shortly. I mean, he literally just finished, I think, formatting the print and digital copies of it. Sean Daly is a guy that, you know, he's going to be a name in this industry that people are going to know him. You know, and I'm just glad that, you know, he and I are going to work on something before, you know, he becomes somebody that nobody can get a handle on. So, so yeah, it's a fun story. It's basically this ogre who is imprisoned, and he's chained to a corpse, and he can talk to the corpse. The ghost of the corpse. I don't want to give too much away, but that's the, kind of the gist of it. And you know, it's almost, it's like kind of like a, you know, the a Lethal Weapon buddy type story where this corpse, this ogre just wants to just get out of here and just go home, and this this ghost of the corpse is encouraging him to go on adventures.
Very cool. So those are the ones we're working on right now. Is there something else before we get? I want to get back to Salvager,
Yeah, I'm working on that, and then I'm also putting together a story called Cedar Forest, where it's a kind of like a Holden Caulfield meets Battle Royale. And that's in development right now. And I'm working with this artist, Von Randall, out of the Philippines. And it's, you know, it's definitely a different style. And I think for me, it's I can't stop. Like, I was talking to Travis McIntyre, who's the editor-in-chief of Sourcepoint Press, and, you know, when he was just saying, like, you know, you're working on all these titles and everything, and I just, and he's like, well, what about working on the three main titles that, you know, you have right now? And I'm like, I'm just waiting for art for them. And if I get to a point where I'm just waiting for art on a story, I can't stop myself but start writing a new story. And, you know, so it's a problem.
Well, it's a good problem in a sense, because then you get to make things happen. And when you have a little downtime with one thing, it's like those things when they have all these plates spinning on tops of sticks. You know, you had one plate starts to wobble, you got to run over and spin that plate. So you're able to have all these plates going. You get one spinning real well, and you go off and get to another plate. Make that happen.
And that definitely sums it up.
Now, why don't we get back to Salvagers? I want to get back to that, because there's a lot going on with Salvagers, which is a terrific book. We were talking a little bit before we started to record about the fact that you've got 8 issues of Salvagers out altogether.
Yeah.
You finished a Kickstarter not too long ago.
Yeah, we just finished the Kickstarter at the beginning of October, and I apologize to anybody who did not get an official thank you from me. I tried to do my best. But, I mean, it finished, I think, the Wednesday before New York Comic Con. And New York Comic Con was in, like, the first weekend of October. And every weekend in October, I was somewhere. So it was almost like, you know, it was one of those things where you get home on Monday, you're leaving on Thursday. And, you know, and it was all over from New York to Connecticut to Los Angeles. So we were everywhere. Mm-hmm. And it was a good final push because, you know, usually you think like, all right, November, I can just quit and I can just stop. But the convention cycle, like we were talking about, is so important because that's where things are happening. Mm-hmm. Just like social media, mm-hmm. social media is the party. And if you're not there, you're not a part of the conversation. Mm-hmm. And it's the same thing with conventions. You know, mm-hmm. convention, when you go to conventions, it's all about selling your books, mm-hmm. but it's also about meeting other people. Mm-hmm. And when we were at, we talked about Baltimore, and mm-hmm. we were both saying how we'd both go back to Baltimore. And Baltimore, when we were at Baltimore, we were across from a company called Comic Wow, mm-hmm. which is a part of Game Trade Media Alliance, which is Diamond's gaming distribution. Mm-hmm. And I met this guy, Rick Ankney, who is, you know, he works for Game Trade Media in developing board games. And, you know, he does paints like all the little miniatures and everything. So Friday he came over and he, you know, when he sees our banners and everything, and he comes over and he's talking to us, and I have this, you know, this big Ken Lashley image of the Salvagers. So he sees that, he comes over and he buys the books. And on Saturday he comes back over and he's talking again, and he asks, you know, have you ever thought about making a board game? Mm-hmm. Now, if you're in comic books, if anybody asks you if you're into making an animated series, making a movie, making a board game, your immediately reaction is absolutely. So I was like, yeah, absolutely. But I had no idea where to begin with making a board game, because I just know that, again, just like comics, it's such a saturated market. Well, this guy develops board games. He makes board games. And he was telling me that he had this board game that he was making that he didn't like the IP on it. And he thought that Salvagers would fit in perfectly for it. So again, like, this goes back to, you know, the whole thing of, it's so important to be at cons, because opportunity in this industry, opportunity is your greatest success. If you're not putting yourself out there to find opportunity, to meet a publisher, to sit down and talk to a guy who is looking to draw a comic book, mm-hmm. and you are somebody who's looking to write a comic book, mm-hmm. you know, basically a comic book convention puts all of us into a room together, mm-hmm. and it's almost asking us to run into each other. So it's so important to do that. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, like, I know we were talking about Stabbity Bunny, mm-hmm. in New York, mm-hmm. Bleeding Cool. They came by the booth, mm-hmm. and Rick was gone, Richard was gone, and you were there, mm-hmm. and you know, knowing right away. I mean, anybody who is green might have been like, no, I'm not giving away a free book. I'll get yelled at for that. But, you know, you're like, oh, Bleeding Cool, here you go. You know, mm-hmm. that works out, and it creates opportunity. Mm-hmm. So you can't thrive in this industry, mm-hmm. if you're not putting yourself out there, whether it's on social media, mm-hmm. or at conventions. Conventions are so important to be at. So you were telling
me, though, that sometime soon, but by the time this podcast airs, you will have tried it out for the very first time, this board game.
Yeah. So the weekend of November 17th, 18th, we're going to be in Philadelphia at PAX Unplugged. And the, you know, Game Trade Media, Rick is putting, I just got off the phone with him, you know, an hour ago, mm-hmm. and we were going over character descriptions, character, you know, their abilities. And I mean, it's awesome. It just sounds so cool. I can't wait to play it. But we're putting this all together so we can go to PAX Unplugged and we can have an official like demo ready game. And we're going to play it with a few of the big game distributors. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to it. And cool. I got a lot of dads in my neighborhood, mm-hmm. that I've told this to, and they're, you know, they're big geeks, and they're like, oh, you got to get one, bring it home, like, let's play it. So mm-hmm. so I'm excited. It's one of those things, like, when you do it and how far I've come. I mean, I just got my eighth issue of Salvagers, mm-hmm. and I laid them all out. I mean, if you follow me on Facebook, you see I posted an image where I had, you know, 1 through 4, which was the first story arc, and 5 through 8, which is the second story arc. And I laid them all out. And when you look at them, like, it's just a sense of accomplishment, because knowing how hard it is to make comics and to do this, to see that you were able to do 8 successfully, it means something. So it definitely, for myself, it was a sense of accomplishment that that we've even come this far.
Now, you have an interesting thing on Facebook. You talked about the fact that your son's favorite stuffy is from your comic. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I was in Cheyenne, and whenever I go to conventions, my daughter, I have to bring her home a present, and she doesn't like Pokemon. Mm-hmm. And if you've ever been to conventions, like 90% of the stuffed animals are Pokemon. So I was in Cheyenne, and there was this girl. She had her own booth, and she made her own little plush dolls. Mm-hmm. So Leah Bellamy mm-hmm. is her name, mm-hmm. and she. So I brought her over to my booth. I had my puppet of Brigby, and I sent her all this all the different images of him, and she sent me this mm-hmm. prototype of Brigby. Mm-hmm. And I loved it. And as soon as I posted it, people were just like, how can I get one? I was like, okay, well, I'll put that in the Kickstarter. So then I was like, okay, well, if we're going to do Brigby, I got to do Tyr. And so I did, I gave her all the images and she did it. And now, seeing my son, he walks around the house holding it so he holds it by the foot. Mm-hmm. So you just have him dragging him behind, which is you're so stereotype of a child carrying a stuffed animal, but you look at it and he's carrying, he's playing, his favorite stuffed animal is one of my characters, which mm-hmm. is pretty trippy. Very trippy.
That must be something. I mean, you didn't imagine that when you first started out with all this stuff.
No, I mean, I definitely never, I never did. I never thought that I'd have cutesy little stuffed animals, but she does a great job. As soon as I got that Garrett Gunn, who does Franklin and Ghost with Source Point Press, mm-hmm. he immediately contacted her and he's like, I need to get some, my character's done. There's another friend of mine contacted her and he's like, I need to get my character. So that's one of the things, in this industry is I just had somebody contact me the other day, Brian Hawkins. And he was like, do you mind if I talk to Chris about doing a job? And I don't own any artists. I mean, they are, I pay them to do something and they do it and I give them a time. But I'm always excited to see the people that I work with getting jobs by other people. It's one of the things that, the saying goes, the rising tide raises all ships. We want to see each other make it. The best thing ever is to see somebody who's in the indie community rise up and blow up, because all that's going to do is, make everybody look to the indie community to say, okay, well, that worked. Mm-hmm. What else is out?
I have to tell you a funny story related to this, because we were at a convention in Miami and we saw a lady in a booth near us who made hats. There were bunny hats, great big rabbit ears hanging down with a different face on it. And of course, Rick went over and said, I wonder if you can make one with the face of my rabbit on it. And so he got some hats from her, and then one day she was delivering some to him, and she said, hey, I have a little something I thought I might show you. And what she did was she gave him two little prototypes of Stabbity Bunny and little rabbits, little plush rabbits.
I think he had those in New York.
You've seen them, yep, because they're all over the place. It's just, and they sell like crazy too. We sold out at New York of the little plush rabbits. So,
and that's one of the things I love about Rick. He's got such a passion for it, mm-hmm. and he's not just stopping at the comic. It's make an experience out of it. Mm-hmm. He's a great guy. I can't talk enough about him. I love him. I love his energy. Mm-hmm. I hope nothing but good things from him. Mm-hmm.
All right, so you got the Kickstarter stuff for Salvagers out. You're working on issue 3, board game, plushies. Yeah. Probably other things coming for all this good stuff. Let's go on. You said you're working on the second issue of Shelter Division. How's that coming along?
It's going well. It's anything, it's got it's got its obstacles. Francesco Tomaselli is an amazing artist. He's got such a style that it's his own. But I think, just like you said, it's the spinning plates, mm-hmm. working on one thing and kind of going back and forth to another thing. I always look forward to ending story arcs, mm-hmm. Because it's that nervous feeling of did I do it right? Do people enjoy it? But I'm having such a blast with it, because, again, with his art, and we're having fun with it. They have there's the agents, mm-hmm. And then there's the main characters and the back and forth between them. It's not so much Men in Black, and it's not so much, you know, the Hellboy-esque of it, but it's, you know, the characters themselves, they have their own issues. You know, it's, I always look at it as having those special abilities that they almost like the X-Men, where like it's like they have these special abilities that we as readers would be like, oh, I'd love that. Mm-hmm. But the character would be like, I would love to get rid of it. Mm-hmm. And I would love to just be normal. We just finished a page in Shelter Division where there's the you know, these two agents are kind of doing like, you know, surveillance on Biggs. Mm-hmm. And he is talking in a furry chat room. So he's, you know, because, you know, he's got this personality where he wants to be loved and he wants to be accepted. So where does he go? He goes to the furry community because that's where he would fit in. And we start to realize that he's actually having a relationship, an online relationship with a female furry. And I had to do some research on furries. I had to talk to some people because I wanted to make it as realistic as possible. I wanted terminology. Is like where they chatted. I wanted that to be authentic. So it was kind of interesting to even dive in there. I told my wife, as soon as I started getting into it, I just want to let you know that I'm starting to like research some furry stuff. Mm-hmm. So I don't want you to think that, you know, that I'm doing anything behind your back or anything, but it's all for the comic. Mm-hmm. But, you know, as I started writing it, it started kind of evolving. And I think as for any writer, when things like this happen and like you bring a love interest to a character who's, you know, just very on his own, like you start to feel for him. And I don't want to get in too much into it, but you do get a sense of like you feel for the characters that you're writing and mm-hmm. this what's going down with him. Like I my heart goes out to him. So mm-hmm. it's a lot of fun. And I'm looking forward to anything that I start, I look forward to ending so the fans, the people that are buying it, can have that sense of completion mm-hmm. right before we start it all over again.
Mm-hmm. Why don't you, for those people who may not be familiar, I think Salvagers, you know, Blue Collar Sci-Fi, we've talked about that several times. Shelter Division, we've talked about it once or twice. Why don't you give a quick update as to what Shelter Division is about?
The Shelter Division is when the investigated become the investigators. It's kind of like if you were watching X-Files and these creatures or anomalies that the, you know, Fox and Mulder were investigating. What if they caught them, brought them in, and now these people became the investigators? And the reason why it's called Shelter Division is these characters have no place in the outside world. Mm-hmm. So what this government organization that's actually called Division mm-hmm. does for them is they say, we're going to give you sanctuary. We're going to give you a place. And in return, you're going to be an asset to us. And we're going to, you know, you're going to go out there and you're going to do for us. As the story goes on, you start to see that there are some ethical discrepancies with Division. But these characters are going to be weighed with the decision of, do I burn down my house? Do I burn down my sanctuary to do what's right? Or do I become unethical to have safety within the walls of Division? Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, I have it outlined for a 4-volume series. Mm-hmm. When I brought it to Source Point Press, I gave them the 4 outlines, which, I mean, it's kind of a test to take to say, okay, we're gonna take on 4 volumes. But they liked it enough that they took it on, and now it's my job to make sure that they don't regret that.
Mm-hmm. Because they tend to do trades rather than individual issues. Source Point.
Exactly. Yeah, and that's kind of what I'm starting to realize is the best way to go is doing the trades, because people want that completed story. Salvagers worked for me because, you know, I did it enough where it was like, okay, I'm gonna take the hit. I mean, there's no money in doing individual issues, mm-hmm. but I wanted to retain the fan base and I wanted to keep it going. So I wasn't looking to turn a profit in that. I think where I am now, we can, and again, not to turn a profit, but I think I can get a team of people together that can produce a 72 to 96 page story within a year rather than within 4 years. Mm-hmm. And that's the ultimate goal, is to finish the story,
mm-hmm.
and get it out there. So,
mm-hmm.
but yeah, Shelter Division, I think right now it is it's a learning curve,
mm-hmm.
for the whole creative team.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking forward to every time we work, every time we do a new page, every time we move forward, I think that we're getting better and better. So I only see better things coming for Shelter Division. And
cool.
And hopefully it will also kind of have that household name that I hope for with Salvagers.
Mm-hmm. Very good, very good. Now, there's something else I saw, because your Facebook page is always full of good information. There's something I see out here on the page. I don't remember if we talked about this at all. Something called Cedar Forest, a new project you're working on with Von Randall. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so Cedar Forest, again, it's just one of those kind of idle hands things that happened where, you're not working on anything, so you just your mind is going. And I always loved the novel Battle Royale.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if a lot of people listening to this have ever read the novel. It's a Japanese novel. It was translated into English, and it's basically about a school. Mm-hmm. And each family has to. This is where I always think the Hunger Games came from. Each family has to give up a child, and they have to send them to the school. And then the school, they go out, and only one person can survive.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of a way to balance the population. And this book was way before the Hunger Games, so that's why I always think like maybe that came from. That was the influence, but I loved that book, and so I was toying around with the idea. And Cedar Forest, if anybody knows the epic of Gilgamesh, Cedar Forest was kind of like the utopia. It was the heaven, the Eden of Epic of Gilgamesh. And Gilgamesh goes in there, and he was like, I'm going to cut down all the trees in there, kind of saying like, I'm going to bring down heaven.
Mm-hmm.
In so many words. And when he sees his best friend die, it's when Gilgamesh kind of realizes his own mortality.
Mm-hmm.
So taking, kind of like always being a fan of Epic of Gilgamesh, I wanted to take on the Battle Royale and this kind of this Holden Caulfield type character,
mm-hmm.
and see like what would happen if you had these genetically engineered children, mm-hmm. that are in beta form. Where this company, this facility is looking to see how they can perfect engineered human beings, but they are doing it at the expense of human life,
mm-hmm.
that they don't see as important, because it's kind of like, well, these are test tube subjects.
Mm-hmm.
So this one kid, he befriends this older subject, and this older subject tells him basically like, you need to get out of here. So he's running away.
Mm-hmm.
From Cedar Forest, and that's when the Battle Royale comes into play, where the director and the military aspect of Cedar Forest is like, okay, we can't let this guy off the premises. Now we have to send all the other children, all the other subjects, we have to send them out there to kill this guy to stop him from leaving. So that's basically the gist of it. But of course, there's going to be hopefully. I can make it interesting enough that there's more layers on top of that.
Mm-hmm. Sounds good. Any ideas to when you guys will have that available for people to look at?
Well, right now I'm just putting together a pitch package. I got four pages. I got the artist, I got the colorist, I got the letterer, and I am going to be talking to a couple publishers about it in the next week.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say you would probably start seeing that in early to mid 2018.
Mm-hmm. So is Facebook like the way to keep up with you? Is that do you do Twitter as well?
I'm on Twitter. I'm a Bob_Sally on Twitter. Bob_Sally on Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
I also have Salvager Series Instagram. But yeah, Facebook is. Kind of my website. Anytime anybody asks me what my website is, I tell them like my Facebook page, because that's where I do most of the interaction. And I feel like it's the best engagement that I can do.
Mm-hmm.
I've talked to other people that they feel like Instagram's the best form of engagement. So each person, I think like you need to have a hand in all forms of social media, but you need to try to figure out which one's your proficient in and stick with that.
Now you're going to go to PAX Unplugged. By the time this airs, you'll have been there already. Other conventions that are coming in the future that we can know about, are you going to kind of take the rest of the year off as far as the conventions go?
Yeah, definitely. I'm taking the rest of the year off. But then, you know, in 2018, I know that I'm going to be at Emerald City. We'll be at Baltimore. We'll be at New York. We'll be at San Diego. I'd love to do Heroes in North Carolina. We're going to be in Philadelphia. We're going to be at Garden State Comic Con. We'll be at Motor City. The Source Point Press is, they're out of Grand Rapids, Michigan. So, you know, they're going to be in Traverse. They're going to be in Cherry. They're going to, you know, one of the things that I, one of the ones that I've heard great things about was, I think it's called Rose City in Oregon. So, you know, it's great having, you know, the people that we have, because we're all over the country, and, you know, you can get that feedback where, you know, somebody might go to a convention. They'll be like, no, don't, you know, we don't need to do this one again. Or somebody might go to one where they're like, oh yeah, this one was a great one. So as the years go by, it's you kind of build that list of cons that you want to be at.
Which is cool.
Heroes is definitely one that I've heard great things about. Heroes in North Carolina, Charlotte, I think it's in Charlotte.
Charlotte, yep. Yeah, so that's good.
And then you have all yours down in Florida, you know, your MegaCon. Yeah. And yeah, you guys have great cons down there.
Yeah, we got Tampa Bay Comic Con's a big one. Other ones all are over the place in the state of Florida, so it's all over the place. But we've started branching out now. We go to, like we said, New York. We saw you in New York, San Diego,
Baltimore.
All these wonderful things. Baltimore, yep. All these places.
Got to travel.
Yep. Got to meet the other people. It's really interesting when you go places and you find people who know your stuff that you don't know how they know your material.
It's so true.
Does it happen to you? I mean, do people walk up and say, I'm such a big fan of this stuff, and you go like, how did you find out about this?
I mean, honestly, like, I've been at conventions where somebody's walked up to my table and I give them my pitch and they're like, I backed your Kickstarter. And it's a great feeling, because you know, or people are like, oh yeah, I bought your book at this convention that you weren't even at, you know. It's it's great, and it's happening. So it's when you put in the hard work to do this and you start seeing the payoff, it's a big thing.
I'm going to wrap up stuff by talking about something on your Facebook page. There's two related subjects having to do with music. You do a thing about where people put out scores, like for the music to listen to while you're reading the book. And then on the other hand, you have a Led Zeppelin compilation. You say, if you own this, we are friends. You're old, but we are friends.
Well, I'm old, so I can say that, But no, I mean, I was listening to Led Zeppelin, and I like to, when my kids are eating, I like to like play music for them that, you know, I think is something that they should hear. You know, I've played them Pearl Jam 10, you know, those albums that, you know, the... Weezer, the Blue Album, and, you know, so I get Pink Floyd is my favorite band, and Radiohead, I love Radiohead, but they're a little bit, probably a little too progressive for children, but, you know, I could play, I've played Led Zeppelin for them, and there's, you know, there's some songs, so when I, you know, when I was doing that, I just, it brought me back to being a kid, and I remember when I opened up that box set on Christmas, and it was just amazing. Because, I mean, and like, kids these days just wouldn't understand what it's like to open up, to have four CDs that is, like, all the Led Zeppelin music. I mean, now you go on, you can go on iTunes, and you can download it. You can go on Spotify, and you can, anything you want to listen to, it's there. But back in the early 90s, you didn't have that, you know. So when Led Zeppelin did that, it was great. And then it was like every band started doing that. I remember the next one I got was like Nirvana, you know, and Nirvana had a box set, and it was like, how does Nirvana have a box set when they're this new? But, you know, but everybody started doing their box sets. One of my other favorites was Crosby, Stills, and Nash. Like, I loved Crosby, Stills, and Nash box set because it was like that, you had it all. So yeah, so that just, that post was just kind of a nostalgia, like, I had to post it up there just because I just wanted to engage. I like engaging with people, finding out, like, you know, there's times that you post something and you're only engaging with your comic book fans. Mm-hmm. Then there's times that you post something and you're only engaging with your friends mm-hmm. or your family. But to be able to post something and to merge the two mm-hmm. and to have them talking together, then that's a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. What about a soundtrack for... I don't remember that you've ever written a soundtrack or put together a soundtrack for any of your comics.
I never have.
Yeah, well, are you thinking about that? Because you listen and you talk about what's your favorite soundtrack and you list the whole... It's... I'm not sure which...
The Crow.
It's from The Crow. Yeah, okay, that makes sense, yeah.
The Crow is my favorite soundtrack. Yeah. For the Salvagers... Mm-hmm. I mean, I feel like there would have to be like almost like a Trent Reznor score. it would have to be. I think that would be pretty cool. Trent Reznor's done it before. I think he could do it again. Mm. So if I could have anything, I would want or even like David Grohl. Mm-hmm. I think David Grohl could probably do something that would be pretty awesome. Mm-hmm. And he'd probably be into that too.
Do you remember the Nexus book that came out with a plastic record in the middle of it, volume 3 of the Black and Whites?
No.
If you ever get a chance to get that, there was a Black and White version, Mike Baron and Steve Rude. It was Nexus volume 3. It was Black and White, but in the middle of it was a little record they had recorded, which they recorded the dialogue and had music and stuff in it. It was like putting that book to like a soundtrack. You know, full blow, not just songs, but had them doing dialogue and stuff like that. So
that's pretty epic. I'm surprised that people haven't started doing that again.
It was a great thing. I loved listening to it. I thought it was a lot of fun. So that's when I thought you were talking about soundtrack. Maybe that's what you were talking about. Maybe doing like an audio version of Salvagers.
That would be pretty cool. I've actually been on a radio show that they wanted to do a Salvagers radio episode. Hmm. I can't even think of it. It's out of Cambridge, Massachusetts. Anyway, we've talked about doing it, and it just never came to light yet. But it's, eventually. Yeah. I always say, eventually.
Yeah, well, that'd be something that could be fun to do. Well, Bob, you do all kinds of wonderful stuff. We'll look forward to seeing you at conventions and getting your good things. Do you know when your next Kickstarter is going to kick in, probably early next year?
The next one that I do, mm-hmm. You know what? I'll probably end up doing one in April or May just because I don't want to keep people waiting too long. And again, I think that if you do Kickstarters as a pre-sale, it's beneficial to everybody. So mm-hmm. I think I'm toying with the idea of doing a Kickstarter for Ogre mm-hmm. once we get that going. Mm-hmm. Also to take volume 3 of Salvagers and split it into two mm-hmm. To where people can get the first half and then the whole thing or the second half mm-hmm. instead of doing individual issues. I've thought about doing that as well for 2018. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure that we'll think of something mm-hmm. and hopefully, we'll be able to bring you new exclusive stuff.
That'd be great. Now, one thing I do want to mention to people, if you buy a collected edition of Salvagers are coming out, you might find my name somewhere.
Oh, yeah. In the back. Absolutely.
You got
a little blurb.
Is that the back page that you're talking about? You quote one reviews. Where is that?
That's the back of the back cover.
Oh, back cover.
It's the back cover. Cool. That's the back cover of the book.
You'll see what I think of the book if you get to that place.
Yeah, I'll tell you right now, it's Salvagers among the very highest and most powerful sci-fi stories you can find. If you haven't gotten into Salvagers yet, boy, have you got a great read ahead of you. Wayne Hall, MajorSpoilers.com.
Yeah, that was it. I wrote that, and I still think that to this day. I think that Salvagers is one of those great indie books out there that if you don't have access to it, if you haven't started reading it, you really should, because it's great.
And I appreciate that blurb, Wayne. You know, it's one of the things that I've always loved about Salvagers and what we've done with Salvagers is people that have always gotten our stuff out, like you, always giving back to them. So if we're distributing 2,000 copies of this, mm-hmm. hopefully people see MajorSpoilers.com on the back of that, and then that grows your fan base as well.
That'd be fun. Well, it's always good. The most important thing, of course, is it's called Wayne's Comics, and not because of the Wayne, it's the comics part that matters. I'm always trying to get people to know stuff that they may not be aware of that they should. So that's where that comes from. But, Bob, you keep doing great stuff. I can't wait to see what you're going to do in 2018. We got good things to look forward to.
Thanks, Wayne. I appreciate it. And I'm sure I'll be hitting you up to come back on your show soon.
That'll be great.
Thanks, Wayne.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. as a man. I'm flesh and blood. I can be ignored. I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
And that's a wrap for this episode. If this weekend is a holiday one for you, have a great time. And even if it isn't, we'll see you next week. So until then, keep reading your comics.